Okay, good morning, everyone. It's good to see you all this morning. We get a Mazel Tov. We had a baby boy on Shabbos.
Mazel Tov.
Thank you. In fact, the reason why we had Shir early last week was because we're trying to decide whether we needed to go into the hospital the whole time just yet. So I don't know if I made any sense or not. I think my mind was somewhat elsewhere, but Baruch Hashem, everyone is doing well. B'Shah Tov Mutzlachas, we're going to make a bris tomorrow. If anyone is in Passaic, let me know. And so it's a pleasure to be here again to learn with you. We're going to continue with our topic from last week. And Baruch Hashem, last week we were zoche to have a lively discussion about Rambam's perspective on the mitzvah, or to study philosophy, or whether he said it's something that you have to do, it's something that you must do. Actually, it should be more precise. We weren't talking last week. Last week we were talking about the mitzvah of Emunah, or the mitzvah of Yediyah. But in our discussion of the mitzvah of Emunah, or Yediyah, as the Rambam puts it, the question was, what is Rambam's position on studying philosophy? So I thought we would continue that conversation this week. Avi already came prepared with Makoros. The first question we need to really think about is, what is philosophy? And that's actually a term that could be defined in many different ways. I think there's three ways to define it that's relevant for us. But I think for our purposes today, what we mean by philosophy is discovering the truth using your seichel. That's what we mean. I was actually thinking about that last Shabbos after the baby was born. I was holding him on my lap, and thinking, wow, you know, it's so special that this little baby, he has the whole future in front of him. He's not encumbered by his past decisions or mistakes. It's all potential, whatever he wants. And then I was thinking about the Parsha last week, though I didn't end up making it to Shul for Shabbos Day. We were in labor at the time, but thinking about Yisro and the lesson of Yisro was someone who realized that it is never too late to discover the truth and then to pursue that truth. Yisro had everything. He was the Kohen Midian, the prestigious priest, but he left it all to pursue the truth, and a truth that he discovered using his seichel. Yisro, in fact, the Medrash tells us, believed that everybody should independently discover the truth. There's a Medrash that said he made a tenai with Moshe that he not be mechanech his kid. He allow his kid to grow up and independently discover the truth, which is something we could also talk a little bit about later. So Yisro teaches us that it's never too late to discover the truth. And that's something that that was very, very important for the Rambam, as we'll see. So what I think we're going to talk about, we'll begin with today, is Rambam in Mor Nevuchim 351. And if you see in the chat, I gave the Mar Makom to this in Sefaria. So you could just follow it along there. It's a long chapter, and you should really read the whole chapter. We're going to pull out certain pieces. We're going to try to summarize and present the Rambam's position here. But it's kedai, I would say, afterwards to go ahead and read the whole chapter. And hopefully this will give us a better havana of the Rambam's understanding of the role of philosophy and what role it could play. So the Rambam over here, and if you take a look in the second paragraph of the link, the Rambam tells us to imagine a city with a palace at the center. The city's populace contains many types of people. who vary in their proximity to the palace. And specifically, there are seven levels. The first level, and again, these are all over here, we'll sort of present outside the first couple of paragraphs, and then we'll read inside a little bit. I'm going to be reading inside, not from the translation you have in front of you, but from this translation, from the Penis edition. But you'll see it's not too different on these matters. And also, actually, the Hebrew I'm going to be reading from is from the Kappach edition, which isn't also the one that you have in front of you. But it's always good to look at multiple translations. That way you can you could compare. So we have this mashal of a palace. So we have some people that remain outside of the city. That's the first group. The second group of people have entered the city, but their backs are to the palace courtyard. In other words, basically, they're heading in the wrong direction. The third group of people face the courtyard, but cannot see the courtyard. The fourth group enter the courtyard. The fifth group enter the palace antechamber. Then some people in the king's room. And finally, some people actually converse with the king. So the metaphor depicts different levels of closeness to the king in his palace. And of course, they correspond to different levels of Yediyas Hashem, different levels of understanding HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So let's start with the first group. These group of people have no conception of the divine, hence they're not even in the city, neither based on speculation, meaning their own seichel, nor based on tradition. The Rambam writes here, it's not necessarily so politically correct, that such people are below the rank of mankind, though they're above the rank of monkeys, since they have the chomer and the tzura, they have the form and the shape of a person, right? They look like a person, but the mental capacity, and they have a mental capacity above that of monkeys, but the fact that they have no conception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu means that in a certain sense, they're subhuman. There's no realization of that Tzelem Elokim that they have. The next group of people have a conception of God, but it's false. So therefore, they've entered the city, but because their conception of God is false, their backs are to the courtyard. They're going in the wrong direction. They've adopted their false doctrines, the Rambam tells us, either to great mistakes in their own speculation, or because others have taught them falsely. In other words, they've been taught false beliefs. So while they desire to come close to God, they really do. They recede, in fact, more from him. In other words, again, metaphorically, they're walking away from the palace because they want to come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but because of their false conception of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it turns out that they're walking away from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rambam here says something very surprising. He says that this second group is far worse than the first group. So why are they worse? Right? Adarabha, they're closer. I mean, at least they're in the city. At least they believe in God, right? So what makes them worse? So the Rambam here presumably is talking about people who have a corporeal understanding of God. They believe that God has some type of physical form. And the Rambam tells us in many places that divine corporeality is probably the most possible, most problematic of all possible mistakes that a believer in God could make. The Rambam writes in Moreh Nevuchim 136 that it's even worse than Avodah Zarah, because Avodah Zarah for the Rambam means serving God through intermediaries, whereas the Ovid Avodah Zarah could fundamentally have a correct conception of God. They may or they may not, but they could. If you look at the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Avodah Zarah, how did Avodah Zarah evolve? Avodah Zarah evolved because people were looking for a means to serve God. It's hard to relate to serve something that you can't see or touch or feel. And therefore, they were praising God by serving and praising the great creations like the sun and the moon that he created. So the truth is that in Ovid Avodah Zara, the Rambam says, oftentimes it's not like they believed that the idol that they fashioned was the God, that they weren't that stupid. They were serving God through an intermediary. We could talk about more about that another time. But these people that have a corporeal understanding of God don't even have a correct conception of God. The person, in a sense, who believes in the corporeal understanding of God is trying to serve a God that doesn't exist, right? In other words, they're doing the Avodas Hashem, they're doing Taryag Mitzvos, they're davening every day, three times a day. But they're davening to a God that doesn't exist because the error that they're making is so fundamental that the God that they're serving isn't a God that exists, and the God that exists, they don't serve. So that's why the second group is so bad. Now, still you could ask, okay, but why is it worse than the first one? At least they believe in God. The first group of people, the ones outside the city, don't even believe in God. So the answer, maybe you'd think that the second group is worse because they should have known better. We don't really blame the first group. They're barely even human. Not even human, right? But the second group, their error is unforgivable. They should have known better. But that's not the correct answer, because the Rambam tells us that even the second group is not necessarily, you know, how they come to this false understanding. The Rambam writes, because they're following the traditional authority of one who had fallen into error. In other words, the second group of people have been led astray. They were told the wrong thing, right? They went to Cheder, and they heard Hashem is here, Hashem is there, up, down, right, left, all around, and they thought, oh, you know, it sounds like God is here, there, everywhere. I could point to him. He exists. He's physical. He's just everywhere, right? So, now, another time, and this might, you know, I think this would be a whole shiur in its own, and we're not going to be able to do it today. We have to address the question, is does the Rambam really think that they're not responsible for their errors? I think the Rambam actually does think they're ultimately responsible. He writes that quite clearly in another place in Maor Nevuchim. But still, it's not like, it's certainly not like they were malicious in any way. And in fact, the Rambam over here writes about this second group. They are those concerning whom necessity at certain times impels killing them. So there's a time that we even kill the people in the second group. He doesn't say we have to kill the people in the first group. We should note that the halachos concerning killing apikorsim and moridim v'lomalin and all those things are not relevant nowadays, as the Chazon Ish and other poskim explain. Again, maybe another time we could talk about why that is as well. But I want to understand why the Rambam writes that we would kill the people of the second class. So the answer, interestingly, emerges from, again, the final words of this passage. He writes, there are those concerning whom necessity at certain times impels killing them and blotting out the traces of their opinion, lest they lead others astray. In other words, I don't think actually the Rambam thinks that the second class is inherently worse than the first class. The second class is inherently better than the second class. They do at least believe in God. But their danger lies in the fact that they could lead others astray. The reason to kill these types of kofrim is because they're dangerous. The first class, in a sense, doesn't really pose a danger to society, while the second class does, because they're spreading their false beliefs. This relates to another interesting issue in the Rambam, which again, maybe another time we could discuss the role of Tinok Shenishba. The Rambam thinks that even people, whether this applies to all Yud Gimel Ikarim or not is an interesting question, again, for another discussion, but he's discussing the Karaites. The Karaites denied at least one of the Ikari Ahuna, so they had the halachic status of Kofrim. But the Rambam writes that our attitude towards them is different. Our attitude towards them is what he writes in the Perashat Mishnayos and also in Hilchos Mamre and Perek Gimel, Halacha Gimel. We try to be makarvim latorah. We show kindness and warmth to them to motivate them to return. And the Rambam there says, though this is not printed in the older printings of the Rambam, but if you look at the Frankel Rambams or the newer printings, there too he says, and we shouldn't rush to kill them, about the Tinok Shenishba. So again, what's he saying? We shouldn't rush to kill them. Why should we kill them? We just said that they're not responsible for their errors, right? The Rambam distinguishes between the first generation of Karaites who are full-fledged mumrim because they went off the derech versus their children and their grandchildren, whom we don't blame because they're not responsible for their errors. They were just poorly educated. The reason why they're kofrim is because that's what they learned in school. That's what their parents taught them. We don't blame them. That's why we act towards them with love. We try to bring them back. So why does he say we shouldn't rush to kill them? And why are we killing them at all? The answer is, like we said, that the reason for killing them is not because they're deserving of death be'etzem, because it's not their fault. It's because of the danger that they pose. And that's, I think, why the pshat here in the second class of people where he's saying that at times, not always, because we also try to be makari of them. After all, as the Rambam writes, they came to this conclusion because of their lousy education. But at times, because of the danger they pose, they're spreading of false beliefs, then we might have to get rid of them. Okay, so that's the second group. The third group of people are the masses of religious people who observe Torah, but are ignorant. Okay, they follow the Torah, they observe the halacha, but they're ignorant. The fourth group are people who devote themselves exclusively to the study of halacha. So they have proper beliefs, and they're Talmidei Chachamim. But they arrive at these beliefs based off of tradition alone, rather than investigating or attempting to prove them. So this is the fourth class of people. So this is a very interesting thing that they're, again, the fourth class, that's pretty good, right? I'll read you the exact the English translation over here, right, of the fourth class. Those who have come to the habitation and walk around it, in other words, the habitation is the palace, right? They're well into the city. They've even entered the habitation. They walk around it, are the jurists who believe true opinions, meaning say they have correct emunos videos, on the basis of traditional authority. In other words, they know it because that's their mesorah. They've been taught it. And study the law concerning the practices of divine service. So they know halacha, they learn gemara, but do not engage in speculation concerning the fundamental principles of religion. So they're not studying, they're not investigating, if you want. They're not studying philosophy. They're not trying to understand the basis for this. And make no inquiry whatever regarding the rectification of belief, right? So they're happy believing, they're maminim, the name maminim, but they don't try to figure out what's the basis of their belief. There's a very fascinating Rambam in Mor Nevuchim as well, who describes the experience of Har Sinai. And he's explaining the Medrash, the Gemara Makos, that says Anochi and Lo Yiya are Mepiha Agvura Shim Anum. So what does that mean? So the Pasha Pshat is, you'd think it means that the Jewish people heard those first two dibros. They were listening. Hashem said it and they understood it. The Rambam does not say that for a number of reasons, among them because he thinks that philosophy, that nevuah is impossible for someone who hasn't achieved a certain degree of perfection, of moral perfection, of intellectual perfection. The Rambam thinks that the Jewish people, and he's medayik this from a number of psukim, heard the word, heard the koil at Sinai, as the pasuk emphasizes, but that was sort of an undifferentiated sound. It wasn't actually the literal differentiated words of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They heard the koil. So what does it mean, mepiagvur Hashemanu, right? What does it mean? In what sense is it mepiagvur? So the Rambam tells us the knowledge of these first two dibros, Anochi and Eliya, meaning to say the truth of God's existence, is something that they had firsthand, as opposed to all the other mitzvos in the Torah. All the other mitzvos in the Torah, how do we know them? Because Hashem told Moshe, and Moshe told us. In a sense, they are secondhand, right? We didn't hear them from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're not firsthand knowledge. They're secondhand. They're through Moshe Rabbeinu. Whereas Anochi Anoia, the truth of God's existence, is something that one can prove. And the Klal Yisrael did prove them. In other words, at Sinai, the Jewish people knew the truth of God's existence, not because it's something that they heard, but it's something that they independently verified. And that's what it means, Mipia Gvura Shemanum. It means that there was firsthand knowledge. The Or Sameach points out that answers the Ramban's Kasha, one of the Ramban's Kashas on the Rambam. Gemara is really just passing the Gemara in Makos, right? The Gemara says, Torah Tzivalanu Moshe, Gematria is 611 mitzvos. The first and the second were from the Pia Gvuras. He says, how could that be? If you look at the first two Dibros, there's about five mitzvos. There's not two. But the Yesod is, it's very simple. The answer is that the Rambam holds. It's not referring to these five, the five mitzvos of the first two Dibros, or even the words of the first two Dibros. It means the truth of his existence and the falsehood of his non-existence. That's something that was firsthand knowledge. And so that's how he answers the Ramban's Kasha. It's very, very meduyak. An issue you have to deal with this, which maybe another time we could talk about, is how does this relate to what the Rambam says in Perek Zayin of Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, where he says that the basis of our belief in Torah is that we heard Hashem speaking at Sinai. We heard Hashem tell Moshe, 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 Lech Amor Lahem Kach V'Kach. If the Jewish people didn't hear the literal words, how could we say that? That's a very important question. I think there's a very Yosaitistic answer to that, but we're now getting a little bit too far afield. So the point, though, that I'm trying to bring out from here is that the difference between the fourth group of people, which is what the Rambam is describing now, and the fifth group, which we'll get to in a moment, is how they knew of the truth of God's existence. The fourth group knows of the truth of God's existence because, well, it doesn't matter how they knew. They might know because they were told. They might know because they have an intuitive belief. It might be stemming from experiential aspects.
Or maybe they don't know.
No, they do know. He doesn't say that. They 100% know of God's existence. They're 100%
they know.
I'm sorry?
He didn't say they know. He says,
sure they do. And that's the difference.
Where does he say they know?
I'll read it again. I'll read you as Lashon in English. They have true opinions on the basis of traditional authority. True opinions means
that they... Is that knowledge in Rambam?
Absolutely.
That's not knowledge.
Why not?
What he would call knowledge.
Where are you? You're making this assertion. You made it last week. Show me where you think it. Say that. When he says Yodea, he never says you have to know it through proof. Yodea does not. I mean, again, I challenge you again to show me where the Rambam thinks that Yodea demands proof. He never says it. The fourth group of people have Yodea. They're Mekayim, what the Rambam says in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Aleph. They're Yodea. That whole thing, that God exists, that he necessarily exists, that it's an independent existence, and the like. They fulfilled what he writes in Mishneh Torah, Mor Nevuchim, and Sefer HaMitzvos. But they're still only on a fourth group. They're not yet inside. They're not talking to the king. They're for sure that. So they've got a long way to go. But I think that they're 100% ma'aminim.
Later on, Rambam writes that if somebody believes in God on the basis of authority, then he doesn't really believe in God. He just
said, where does he say that?
Later in this exact section of the Mor Nevuchim.
Show me where.
I copied and pasted the section I sent it to you privately at the beginning of Shir.
Okay, so we're gonna look at it. We can look at it right now. I didn't see your chat. For jurists, I found different translations. Chachamim, Lamdanim. There's no difference between
Chachamim
and Lamdanim.
I sent it earlier. I'll send it again.
Okay. Okay. We're going to get to that paragraph. We'll get there. I don't think that paragraph is saying what you're saying it says, but we'll get there. We haven't gotten there yet, right? That's later on in this chapter, no?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's later down.
So good. So let's go on. Okay. So now we're about the fourth group. Again, these are Lamdanim. They have true opinions, but they have not yet they know it based off of traditional authority and the study of Torah as opposed to speculation. Okay, so now we're up to the next group. So the Rambam writes, those whom have investigated matters of theology have entered the antechamber, that's the fifth group. And there are many different levels, the Rambam says, of this group. Some have entered further into the palace, while others remain outside in the vestibule. And this is the level of Chachamim, the Rambam writes. Then those who have succeeded in finding proof for everything that could be proven have a true knowledge of God insofar as knowledge can be attained. And they're together with the king in the room. That's the sixth group. And now I'd like to talk about the final leap. And this is something that's quite incredible, actually. Once a person is in the room with God, as it were, where is there room to go any further, right? What happens next? So the Rambam writes that the next step, like the previous steps is, or I should say, unlike the previous steps, is not intellectual. What comes next, right? He's already achieved everything that could be accomplished intellectually. So what happens next? What's the next step? It's a communion with God. To move forward, the Rambam says that a person has to abandon all that there is in the world and dedicate himself exclusively to the understanding of the Ribbono Shel Olam. And the Rambam writes, this is the level of the Nevi'im. And the Rambam writes that there are basically two steps in the service of God. Number one is understanding God. That's what we've primarily been focusing on now in the first groups. But the second is connecting with God or uniting with God. Hine nizbar ki hamatara achar ha-hasaga his yachdus elav, right? Uniting with God. So we have hasaga, and what comes after hasaga is communion. And the Rambam stresses that this form of connecting to God is only appropriate if it follows the appropriate and necessary intellectual preparations. In other words, you can't get to this hisachdus without having the preparations beforehand. V'kar biarnu, bira ha-Torah, ki havoda hazu ha-achrona, this last step, his yachdus elav, asher ha-irunu eleha b'perkze, lo tia ela le'achar ha-hasaga. Now, why is that? Why can't you have this this type of dveikus without first having the hasaka. So the Rambam says really two things. Number one is that connecting to God is only valuable when you have a correct conception of God. Those who frequently mention God but err in their conception are distant even from the palace courtyard, which I think is the paragraph that Avi was referring to. Those are not, that's not number three. Those are people that are before three because they have a error in their conception. So the first reason why you need the intellectual preparation is because without that intellectual preparation, you will not be serving the God that actually exists. Now, I want to add a very important part here. The Rambam stresses in many, many places that we can't know God. We can't fully understand God. We can't understand or appreciate his essence. Just like the Chachmei HaEmes tell us that though all of the study of Kabbalah is about understanding God, you can't really understand God. Now, you might think, well, if I can't really understand God, if I can't fully understand God, what's the point of even trying? Why is there a mitzvah of Yedias Hashem? David HaMelech tells his son Shlomo, Da Elokei Avicha, right? Know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the answer is that we have to know what we can know and know what we don't know and know that we can't know everything. One thing that we can know, there are certain things we can know. We could prove his existence. We can understand and relate to the idea that there's something that exists that's non-physical. So though we can never fully understand, nevertheless, we have to do our best. So that's the first reason why it's so important. The second thing, reason that the Rambam says over here is the process of investigating and correctly arriving at these correct conceptions must precede connecting itself. The way he puts it over here is Aval Misha Choshev Bashem Umar Bel Zachro Beliadia Ella Shaholech Achar Stam Dimyon Misuyam O Achare Dea Shekibel Mizulaso. Hare, and this I think is the paragraph that Avi was sending us to. Hare hu l'da'ati im heyoso michutz l'chatzer v'rachok mimenu. Right? Now again, this is how I know that it's not talking about group four, like you were saying, Avi, because he says explicitly here, he's michutz l'chatzer v'rachok mimenu.
Rambam uses the term reliance on traditional authority in both places.
In both cases. Even in group two, he's relying on
meaning authority. In group four, he mentions reliance on traditional authority as well.
Yes, but the difference is in one case. Let me try to finish. In one case, he's making a mistake. In one case, he isn't. That's the difference.
In one case, he's making a mistake. In one case,
yes, he has a correct conception. Category four, he says he's making no mistakes. That's why he's in the courtyard.
This seems like a diuk to me. This doesn't seem to be what the Rambam is actually saying.
All right, I need to go on. We could argue about it afterwards, but I don't think it's a diuk. I think it's mefurish. The question is, where is he? He's talking about here, he writes explicitly, people that are outside the courtyard. In other words, they have an incorrect conception. Not only outside of the courtyard, but he says they're rachok mimenu, they're very far from the courtyard. He's talking about the earlier stages. Eino zochas Hashem be'emes, eino choshev bo. Because their conception of God is incorrect, then they're thinking about God, but they're not thinking about God, right? Ki oso adavar asher b'dimyono, that thing that they're thinking about, that thing is their imagination. Vasheru mazkir b'fiv, that which he's saying in his mouth. In other words, he's praying to God. Eino matim l'matsui klal. It doesn't correlate to that which exists, right? In other words, there's no correlation between that which God who exists and the being that they're praying to. Elohu mutsar, Sheyitzro dimyono. It's a creation that their imagination created. Kamosha biarnu bidvarenu al hatarim. Yeah, he's talking about the possible, positive conception. So here, it's not entirely clear which group he's referring to here in this paragraph, but it's clear that they have an errant conception of God. So the point is right, they don't have Yedia because they're wrong. Now, all right, so let's go on. So now, but we're now trying to figure out the leap we're holding already. We're past the fourth stage, fifth stage, sixth stage. We're talking about this great leap, right? So the Rambam tells us, how do I make the leap? How do I make the leap? So the Rambam writes here, you have to concentrate all of your thoughts on God. This pursuit differs from the previous stages, which, like we said, focus on cerebral achievements. It's meditative. Behisbodidus vahehisyachadus. So this is the worship peculiar to those who have acquired knowledge of the highest truth. The more they reflect on him and think of him, the more they're engaged in his worship. Someone at this phase does nothing other than contemplate the divine. And that's why the Rambam emphasizes so much that at this stage, any distractions will impede you. So like group five, group seven has many different levels. The Rambam writes that the greatest of all these prophets was Moshe Rabbeinu. The Pasuk, and this says that he was literally with God. He could converse with God whenever he wanted. The Rambam writes that his level was so exalted that he didn't need to eat and drink, as we read in last week's parsha. It's very interesting, actually. The Rambam sees Moshe Rabbeinu's not needing to eat and drink, not so much as supernatural, but natural. It was a natural step of this, his transcending his physicality to a large degree to connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And then the Rambam tells us that these levels, these madregos, correspond not just to knowledge of God, but also to love of God. V'kfar bi'arnu pamim mispar ki ha'ava kifi erech ha'asaga. Right? Ava, which is, of course, an emotion, is kefi erech ha'asaga. The Rambam emphasizes this in Hilchos Tshuva as well, in the 10th parak. To the degree, in other words, again, we're not talking about just, studying philosophy and reading philosophy books and knowing a lot of philosophy. We're talking about a chibur, a hisyachados, and also an ahava. And the greater the hasaga, the more room there is for greater ava. So what actually happened in this final stage? What happened? It's very interesting because the Rambam defines this final stage as ava. He talks a lot about pleasure and joy when describing it. In Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam writes that this is mitzvah gimel. He shetzivanu yisala, shetzivanu lavaso yisala, lavo yisala. So that's the mitzvah of avas Hashem. V'zeh, how do you mekayim avas Hashem? V'zeh shem is bonein v'naskil mitzvosav upeulosav ad shenasigehu v'nis aneg v'hasagaso tachlis hatainug v'zos ya'ava. It's really fascinating, right? If I said, what's the mitzvah of Ava? I would have said, Ava Hashem, right? To love Hashem. So what does he say? Nisbonin v'naskil mitzvosav upulosav. So first of all, it's not just philosophy. We have to understand his mitzvos and his pe'ulos, right? Acha nesigehu. So till we understand it. Good, fine. But then he says, v'nis aneg b'hasaga. So we take joy, delight in es hasaga. Tachlis hatainog. The epitome of pleasure. V'zosi ha'ava ha'michuyevis. This is the ava sashem that we are obligated in. And later on in that paragraph, he writes, "Hine kvar bi'arnu ki behistaklos tis ames l'cha ha'saga v'yagia ha'tainug v'tavo ha'ava b'hechreach." So let's try to understand, why is that? Why is tainug such a big part of this? Why is it that active, uninterrupted contemplation of the divine is so important? And finally, why is it that the degree of love is to so much contingent upon knowledge?
Reader blank?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question on this, what we're talking about right now?
Yeah. We're in the middle of a thought.
Okay.
Why don't you ask the question, but let's...
Yeah, I was just going to ask, this whole paragraph really reminded me of like Mesilas Yesharim in the very first chapter where he talks about, you know, Tainug, and that's like Olam Haba, that's the Tachlis. Is Rambam saying you can accomplish this in this world? And is that...
Yes, not to the same degree, certainly, because we're limited since we're encumbered by our physicality in this world. So our ability to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu is limited by that. And in Mela, the ability that Tainug is also limited. But one could still achieve a tremendous Madrega even in this world. In that title. So yes, I think that's correct. So again, so why? Let's try to understand this. So let's read the Madrega of this final stage. Here's the Rambam is talking about the levels of Avos and Moshe Rabbeinu. V'zos gam ken Madrega sa Avos, asher higia kirvasam el Hashem Yisborach. Right, the Avos made Hashem's name known in the world. Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. We relate Zeshmi Leolam, right? You know, it's a fascinating idea, right? We define God almost by the Avos, right? Noda Shmo Bahem. Hashem's name is known through them. V'higia me his ached de osam b'hasagaso. And they got to a place that their minds were his ached, right? Echad. They were unified with the knowledge of God. Shakaras im kol achad mehem bris kayemes, as it says of Zacharti Esbis Yaakov, ki elu ha'arba, ratzalomar ha'avos Moshe Rabbeinu, his ba'er bahem min ha'his achdos b'shem, ratzalomar hasagaso be'avaso. So they experience unity with the name of God, which is the knowledge and love for him. So we're talking here, I think, about a emotional and spiritual, a unification of the whole human being. There isn't this bifurcation at this Madrega between the heart and the mind. There's absolute unity in us, first of all, which then translates into this unity with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And it's that shlemus, that lack of tension, that leads to the simcha, that leads to the noam, that leads to the ava. There's no, the emotional, the intellectual, it all merges. And that's what the Rambam theme seems to be describing here. It's a spiritual leap. when you know God, you could connect to God, which creates a spiritual unity with God. So that's what the Rambam is describing. And then the Rambam writes over here that that's actually a little scary, but the connection breaks when we disengage. Ki haseichel hazeh asher shefa aleinu meito yisale hu hamaga asher beinenu leveino. Right? So the connection is through through that our thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'chira b'yadcha. The Rambam says the option is yours, the choice is yours. Im tirtze l'chazek es hamag hazeh u'la'avoso, asay. If you want to strengthen this connection, do so. Im tirtze l'achlisho, if you want to make it shvach, to let it weaken until it breaks, I'll say, and do that. You know, what causes it to get weakened? Thinking about engagement and other things. Vida. Even if you're the greatest philosopher, you're the wisest of men in terms of knowledge of God. But when you stop thinking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, umis asek b'chol yeshuscha b'achila hachrechi, so b'esek hachrechi, and you get involved in other necessary things like eating, hincha mafsik oso hamaga asher b'incha uvein Hashem. You've broken that connection. B'incha imo as, you're not with him at that moment. V'chein ein hu imcha, he's not with you. Ki oso hayachas asher b'incha uveino kfar nifsak b'foal b'osa shah, because that connection is broken from that moment. You know, it's very interesting, those of you who maybe read Hasidic Sfarim or other types of Sifrei Kabbalah or the like, how similar the Rambam's description of this type of dveikus is to, it's a mystical union. It's the, I'm not saying the Rambam was a Mekubal. He was not. The Rambam didn't have the Kabbalah. He rejected Kabbalah to the degree that he even knew of it, which he didn't really know of it. But the type of dveikus that the Rambam is describing about is very similar to the type of dveikus that you see described in Kabbalah, in Hasidus, and the like, that emerges from thinking about, trying to understand God and then creating this connection and then thinking about it. It's a mystical union. The Rambam here is not, you know, the intellect only gets you so far. And beyond that, this final leap that we've been talking about in this parak is really much more than, it's not the intellectual leap. It's taking that intellectual knowledge of God that you've had and turning it into some type of hisachdos. So the Rambam so far has guided us through the gates of the palace, past the antechamber, into the throne room, and he's sort of told us that, you know, there's two steps here. You have to know God, but then you have to connect to God. So where does that leave us? You know, when you're reading this chapter, I think you know, you might have a lot of chalishas hadas. Like, this stuff sounds so beyond me. I'm not even close to anywhere to this. So the Rambam tells us that in this very chapter that, you know what? I'll tell you how to get there. And he gives you step-by-step instructions, a reasonable path to perfection over here. He talks about how you have mitzvos. You know, the Rambam knows that a person can't just like get up one morning and decide, I'm going to spend my whole day thinking about the divine. It doesn't work that way. We're humans. So what do you do? How do you get there? So I think we've referred to this before. Vida, ki kol ma'asei ha'avodah halalu, ki kriyas ha'Torah, da tfila, v'asi yashar mitzvos, ein tachlisan ela shetuchshar b'saseik b'mitzvosav yis'aleh milaso b'nyanei ha'olam, ki ilu his'asakta bo yis'aleh lo b'zulaso. So all these mitzvos, ma'isa mitzvos, Talmud Torah, tefillah, these are a means to cause you to occupy and to fill your mind with the mitzvos of Hashem and free your mind from engagement in the world. And the Rambam, I think here, I don't think he's referring to all mitzvos. Many mitzvot, as we've discussed, relate to perfecting society. He's talking here about mitzvot ben adam l'mako, and they help you focus your thoughts on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. V'lachein im atam espalo b'nanu asfasecha ufanecha lakir umachashev b'mem karcha umekcha. But if you daven and you move your lips and you face the wall, but you're thinking about your business, you're reading Torah with your lips, but you're thinking about you're building your house, without thinking about what you're even reading. You do your mitzvot, but you do the mitzvot with your limbs, without actually thinking about what it's all about. So al tol tachshov shigata latachlis. Elati az karov lumi shenemar bahem karov ata befihem v'rachok mekil yosehem. Don't think that you've arrived at where you should be. You're like about the pasuk. The pasuk in Yirmiyahu says that you are close to God in your mouth, but far from their thoughts. Literally, their kidneys. Right. So the Rambam here is teaching us how we build that bond. The Rambam in this chapter, on the one hand, has created a very, very high goal. As we talked about when we did the psukah, the sugyas about hashgacha, this is the same parak by the Rambam talks about the person who's always thinking about God will be subject to absolute hashgacha. Very, very high bar. But the Rambam has also told us that this is something that we could all get to. And we do so by learning, observing mitzvos in a thoughtful way, davening with kavana. We can't all, you know, flip a switch and think about God every moment of the day. That's impossible. Can't go, the Rambam says, min ha-katzeh el ha-katzeh. But what you could do is start by davening with kavana, and maybe, you know, even that's too much of a jump. So focus on getting one part of davening with kavana. Focus on the first pasuk of Shema, the first bracha of Shmona Esrei. You get better at that, the Rambam says. You learn how to focus, and you'll be able to expand to more of tefillah, to learning, to doing mitzvos thoughtfully. And then if you've done that, the Rambam says, for many years, then you will grow in this madrega. You'll get further and further in towards the palace, closer to the palace. Now, I wanted to talk about one other thing today, though. We're probably out of time. Maybe we could talk about it next time. I'm not sure yet. But, you know, the Rambam, sometimes people focus on the intellectual aspect of the Rambam, which is correct, as we've seen, he very much emphasizes the intellectual achievement here, but it's not intellectual. That only gets you so far, as we've seen. You need that emotional connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You need to, that his achdus, the ahava, the tainug, all those things that the Rambam said. The Rambam, in the initial stages, doesn't focus so much on the experiential. But I don't think the Rambam would oppose that either, as long as it's something that's not distracting you from the goal. In other words, as long as it's not false. That's what the Rambam is very concerned about. And what I'd like to talk about next time is, I think for most people, certainly myself included, while the intellectual aspect is a big part of Emunah, that's not the whole thing. And to grow in Emunah involves all of ourselves, just like the Rambam describes in that final Madrega. It can't be bifurcated. And so while proof or intellectual arguments or the like does play or can play a very, very important role, it's not the whole thing. And this maybe we could talk about next time brings us to one of the critiques of the Rambam. One question to think about is why in our tradition, we don't have so much of a stress and an emphasis in more traditional sources, in Tanakh, in Talmud, about philosophy, about speculation. What does that mean? How does Rambam address that question? He does. He answers the question. And maybe next time we could talk about also the approach of the Kuzari and other approaches to growing in Emunah. So we should all be zolcha to tremendous madregos of Yedias Hashem. Rambam is daunting, but it's also inspiring how far and what degree a person could achieve. And so we should all be zolcha to grow in Avas Hashem, in Yira Shamayim, and in Yedias Hashem. Have a wonderful Shabbos.
Thank you, Rabbi. Good Shabbos.
Thank you. Good Shabbos.
Yeah. Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.
Mazel tov.
Yeah. Thank you.